Now, those of us who still carry an image of Jaws in our heads every time we go near the sea would not do Dr. Andrea Marshall's job for any money. She's a marine biologist and was researching a population of manta rays in Mozambique when she realised she'd found a new species of giant ray, the largest creature to be discovered in the past 50 years. It has a wingspan of up to 7.5 metres. That's nearly 25 feet. Her work can be seen tonight on BBC Two in the Natural World series, and she joins us from Cape Town. Andrea, what was it like to encounter a 25-foot manta ray?
Good morning, Jenny. I think it's unlike anything that I could really describe. It's such a sensational feeling to be in the water with such an enormous animal. They are so majestic, they are so regal, and very inquisitive. A lot of people don't realize that.
You suspect they're intelligent. Why do you think they're intelligent?
Well, their brain-to-body size ratio is enormous. They have the largest brain of any fish. So we already know that their brain size is large. But additionally, they don't operate like a normal fish or a normal shark. They really engage you much more like a marine mammal. So I would definitely say that they are intelligent.
You left California originally to study sharks. Why did you change to manta rays?
It's so odd. You know, my mother has been telling me for my whole life that I've been obsessed with sharks since I was about 5. So to change over to manta rays was not something that I thought would happen. But basically, they are such an amazing animal. They are the most evolved, the most highly derived of any member of the group. And I think they present such a challenge for a scientist to look at something that's so new. It really speaks a lot about the group, the sharks and rays, the group itself. So that was a really fantastic opportunity for me. And then also, I just wanted to push the boundaries of science as a woman. I really felt that I had an opportunity to give back. And I changed completely from sharks to manta rays, and I don't think I'll ever go back now.
Now, let's be clear about the safety aspects here. Sharks bite, stingrays sting. Manta rays, as I understand it, don't sting. How much of a safer option are they for you?
Well, I think my mom was pleased because I originally came over to South Africa to do work on white sharks. So changing to manta rays was good for her because I'm an only child. But manta rays did evolve from the stingray family, but they no longer have a spine. They've secondarily lost it over time. So they do not have the ability to harm anyone. So aside from the very large size that makes them intimidating to people, they are completely harmless and very gentle creatures.
And why is Mozambique such a good place to study them?
It's odd. It seems to be just a fantastic spot because we have a merging of the cold temperate waters and the warm tropical waters, and we have a lot of upwelling, a lot of nutrients in the area that can support these large planktivores. So it's not just an enormous population of manta rays, but we also have an enormous population of whale sharks along the coastline as well. So it's a phenomenal place to do research.
Now, it was in July 2008 that you made this really important discovery. Let's just hear how you describe it in the television programme.
Up to 2 metres larger than the reef mantas, the giants usually stay at Tofu for just a few days before disappearing back into the Indian Ocean, rarely, if ever, to be seen again. Until now, it was thought there was just one species of manta in the ocean. But the more Andrea swam with them, the more she noticed how different they were. With a wingspan of up to 7.5 meters, they were not only much larger than the reef mantas, but their markings were also much more pronounced.
All these little things started adding up. I just had such a hunch. I mean, I just knew. I just knew in my heart that there was a difference there.
But she needed proof. And it came from a strange bump on the giant's tail.
So how significant, Andrea, was this bump?
Well, it's hard to explain. You know, when you have a hunch that you're looking at two different animals, two different species, it's something that I always knew in my heart that they were different, but I needed some sort of scientific evidence to support my theory. And the first bit of evidence I got was this bump on the tail, and I actually found it when I was looking at a fishery in Indonesia. So I'm in the middle of nowhere. You know, I come across these dead mantas that are being cut up at this fishery, and all of a sudden I notice that this giant manta ray has a vestigial spine. So there's remnant spine on this animal that the other species doesn't have, and I literally gasped. You know, the situation was so intense with all these animals being killed, but I knew that at that moment I had the proof that I needed. And it was just an enormous moment for me.
And how important was that discovery?
Well, it's huge. As you mentioned, it's not very common these days to find a new species of such a large species of megafauna. But at the same time, for manta conservation, it is really important because these two species face considerably different threats. So for their conservation status, it's extremely important to differentiate them and look at what the threats are.
And what are the threats to the new discovery?
Well, certainly for the giant manta, it's directed fishing pressure. We have these giant mantas being fished throughout their distribution for products that are bogus, essentially. They're being sold as Chinese medicinal products that really don't do what they claim. So these animals are being harvested, literally, for medicinal products that are of no use to the consumer.
Now, I know that part of your research involves acoustic tagging so that you can follow them and find out where they go. How do they react to you or driving something into them, which I don't know whether it hurts or not, but one would have thought it would, when they've learned to trust you and swim with you?
Well, that's the interesting thing, is mantas seem to be extremely perceptive. They seem to understand when something is going to hurt them. They seem to understand when something is not going to hurt them. So even though I'm not going to say that they don't react to the pressure that comes from tagging them, but you generally see that they'll shoot off for a minute, they'll turn around, they'll look at their surroundings, they'll realize they're okay, they realize that they're diving with you every day and that you haven't done any real harm to them, and they kind of get right back to whatever they were doing, whether it was feeding or cleaning themselves at a station. So I don't actually think there's negative or adverse effects of the tagging, per se.
And what have you discovered by tagging them? Where do they go?
One of the important things I think people need to remember are these are threatened species, and we know nothing about them. They are so elusive. And so one of the only ways that we can figure out more about them is to find out what their daily movement patterns are like, what migratory behavior is like. And the tags allow us to do that. It's a fantastic technology. So we've been able to establish what critical habitats there are, you know, how are they using these different habitats along coastlines, and that will give us information that is critical to creating marine protected areas. So it's science for a purpose, really.
Now, a lot of the mantas that you've been following have shark bite wounds. How concerned are you about the threat to them of great whites, tiger and bull sharks, who also occupy that area where you've been doing the research?
It's such an interesting situation, Jenny. I've never seen anything like it anywhere else in the world. I mean, manta rays don't really have natural predators because of their size. And you find that in a few locations around the world, you'll get a shark bite or two. But in Mozambique, 75% of the individuals that I've come to know there have massive shark bite injuries. So what it tells me is that there's a learned behavior coming from the sharks in that region where they understand now that they can bite these manta rays without consequence. So it's a very interesting thing to see an animal that has lost its ability to defend itself over time, and then all of a sudden you almost have a reintroduced predator, which is obviously doing some damage to the population.
But do the sharks feed on them? Why would they bite them and then not eat them?
Well, they're biting them, and they actually are consuming pieces of flesh, but the mantas are quick, so they usually get a bite in, and then the mantas are gone. They take off. So I think there is some reward for the sharks, but at the same time, we might not be seeing necessarily fatalities from the mantas, but they are sustaining very serious injuries.
Your mother must still be worried, because you're obviously right in great white shark territory. I know that you've been trying to lobby the Mozambique government to make some protection, some sort of conservation in the area. How are they reacting to that?
I think it's difficult for them to receive. There's a lot of other problems in Africa that seem to take up more of their time than things like conserving manta rays. But I think economically it's important for them to look at them as a resource, a very, very valuable resource. So I'm hoping that more tourism, ecotourism in the area will help influence their decision-making process. And I'm very pleased that BBC has allowed this Manta Queen documentary to air in Mozambique. So I think it's an important documentary for the region for them to be able to see what exactly is happening to their resources there.
Well, Dr. Andrea Marshall, thank you very much for being with us. And for people who are not in Mozambique, but in this country, the film is on BBC Two tonight, and it's at 8 o'clock. Now, still to come in today's programme, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. How much truth is there?